So what do the Regency years have to do with being more cultured and curious?
I thought you'd never ask. Okay. So if the fact that Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, and Emma were all published during the Regency era is not enough to be fascinated with a time period, then I don't know what is. It was a time that finally gave women voices outside of just marrying for status and allowed for women to finally just fall in love. Jane Austen quite literally led the way during the era of Romanticism in both the arts and literature people. Then, how about the fact that Mary Shelley also wrote Frankenstein during the same period, or that Edgar Allan Poe started penning his most famous poems, or even that Ludwig van Beethoven was composing music like a madman already? It was a very short period, but one renowned for its advancements in architecture, fashion, literature, and art that forever shaped modern society as we know it today. And that, Amanda, is what it has to do with being more cultured and curious.
And 200 years later, we are still celebrating Romanticism thanks to Bridgerton, the Netflix series that follows the lives of the 8 Bridgerton siblings as they navigate London's high society in Regency era England in search of love and happiness. The show is set between 1811 and 1820, and each season focuses on one of the 8 Bridgertons as they come of age. Imagine for a second, living in this moment, in a time where the pinnacle of opulence, indulgence in the extravagant, and flamboyant in fashion and grandiose in architecture all comes to a head to create this glittery facade that has masked the stark social inequalities and economic struggles faced by the broader population. It's a must-watch series, and the 3rd season, 2nd installment of it, just dropped, so get on it.
Hey everyone, welcome to Sorta Sophisticated, a podcast rooted in becoming more cultured and curious, where we endeavor to suspend judgment, expand our worldview, and learn to appreciate varying perspectives and values.
But really, it's a show where we hope to enlighten anyone who cares on topics that might make them more interesting and well-versed humans, and just dangerous enough to hold their own in this sophisticated world. Sort of.
So get ready to take off the mask of one of the most romanticized periods in time and learn about what the Regency era was all about and why we as a society are so obsessed with it. Oh, and our word of the day is perspicacity.
What?
Perspicacity. It's a sophisticated word from the Regency era, nonetheless.
Go figure. Of course it is.
I did it on purpose. And it refers to the quality of having a ready insight into things or the ability to understand and discern.
So not me. Got it.
So totally you, not me. Right?
All right. Sure. Whatever you say. Well, are we ready to get started?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. Lay it on me.
All right. So the Regency era. It was a time period between 1811 and 1820 when George IV, Prince of Wales at the time, became the Prince Regent as his father, King George III, was deemed mentally ill and could no longer fulfill his duties as king. But since he was still alive, his son would be the regent and not the king.
Hence, Regency. Regent, Regency.
Yeah. So, like, the regent's sort of like the stand-in, right? He's not really the king.
Yeah,
he's like,
so like the understudy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the understudy. Perfect.
But was he super young?
You'd like to think he was like Prince Joffrey.
Oh, yes.
Like in Game of Thrones. No. Actually, he was more like King Charles. So he was like 50 already.
Right.
So his dad was old. He was old. And he
and
was
still
just
a partier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because he just never got the chance to be real king because he's still a prince. So the problem here was that George IV enjoyed, I don't want to get censored. You get mad at me. Let's call it an extravagant lifestyle.
Does that mean that he liked hookers?
Maybe
a little snuff.
He loved his hookers. I don't know if they had snuff, but yes, you're absolutely right. So he also was an insane spender, amassed massive debt, and had a like crazy flamboyant taste in art, architecture, extravagant, like everything extravagant. It's crazy.
Did he start all the new sculptures?
He personally sat for all of the nude sculptures himself. Okay. Anyway, so despite his sophisticated interest in the arts, his reign was like totally full of controversy. And his baller lifestyle strained his relationship with his dad, King Georgie III. He didn't really want to spend a lot of time with the big boy job. So he didn't want to do like the king job stuff. He just wanted all the good parts, the personal pleasure parts. And it caused quite an uproar and led to a ton of political and societal instability during that time.
All right, so King George IV liked to party. Wait, not the king. He's not a king.
No, you can't call me king.
Yeah.
He was like Eddie Murphy. My girl wants to party all the time. But okay.
Nope. We know how bad I am with movie references. So why don't you give me a little context of what was going on during this time so I can maybe better understand the backdrop of Bridgerton. Because you know, I love Bridgerton.
Did you know Bridgerton was also a book?
It is. I read all of them.
Oh my God. I love you. And now.
I think the books are better than Netflix, but that's a whole other conversation.
We're not doing that in this podcast. Okay.
All right. Need to know the backdrop, I think. All right. I don't actually know.
I'm going to give you some backdrop right now. Okay. So we know Prince Regent took over for King George III because he went batshit crazy. Some people say he went nuts because he lost the 13 colonies, right? That was the time that was all happening.
So is this a conspiracy theory?
I think it's legit. Totally.
I would think that you should probably, lose your mind. You just lost the 13 colonies.
It's sort of a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? So not only did Prince Regent inherit that whole American cluster, but some other pretty significant conflicts around the world. So
could you imagine having more than just that?
Oh, there's a lot. Bear with me. I'm going to go fast here. So first you got the Napoleonic Wars, right?
Like Napoleon, short little guy?
Yeah, like Napoleon. Okay. Yeah, like the tiny guy, huge ego. So he decides Europe is his own personal playground and tries to conquer the whole thing. Spoiler alert. Leading to a series of epic battles where everyone teams up to take him down. I mean, everybody. In the end, he learns that invading Russia in winter is kind of like challenging a polar bear to, a snowball fight. Yeah, it ain't gonna end well. And all this ends up reshaping the political landscape of Europe.
I do think it's so cool how it's all connected. I didn't even know that Napoleon lived during this time.
So I didn't either. Right? I had to look it up, right? Super cool.
So then what else is connected? Because
So then you have the War of 1812, which was really more like a sibling squabble, I would say, between the U.S. and Britain, where the U.S. basically tells Britain, stop stealing our sailors, man, and stop messing with our stuff, bunch of bastards. So I don't know why I did. Did I just do an English accent?
You did.
Accent for Americans?
Or maybe it was like a little bit Irish.
Okay. Stop stealing our sailors and messing with our stuff, bastards. All right. Anyway, after some heated battles, a burned capital, and a lot of inconclusive skirmishes, basically, they just sort of agree to forget the whole thing happened and move on. But since this coincided with the Napoleonic Wars, shit starts unraveling fast. So you got Napoleon, France screwing around over there. You got America over here. 13 colonies. It's crazy. Wait, there's more. Then we had the Anglo-Maratha Wars. Yeah, I think I said that right.
There's a lot of wars. Like, how do you have three wars going on?
Yep, three wars. They're different wars.
Okay, and why were Anglo and Martha fighting anyways? I mean, just relax, everybody. What are these ones about?
Okay, so first of all, it's Anglo-Maratha, not Martha. And they were like a series of, let's call them neighborhood fights, where the British East India Company, the nosy new neighbor, kept picking fights with the Maratha Empire in India over who controlled the backyard. So after several rounds, the Marathas reluctantly give up their turf, and the British threw a massive housewarming party in India.
Cricket.
Right?
We're colonizing
you. Here it happened. This is crazy the way this all comes together. Okay. And one more. If it's not enough crap already to deal with all that, you got Latin America. The Latin American Wars of Independence are happening.
Seriously. So we have the French, the Americans, the Indians from India, not from America. And now we have Latinos. That's a lot of pissed off people.
This one wasn't with the British, but it's important because it still affected Europe. This one was more like a massive block party where the Latin colonies were just tired of Spain and Portugal playing bossy landlords. So they decided to throw them out and declare themselves independent. Yeah. So after all these dramatic showdowns and heroic speeches, they finally told the old empire, adios, muchachitos. We're going to run our own fiesta now. So, hey, we're out.
I guess this is really how European colonialism starts declining on good old George's watch. And then I'm assuming it's all downhill from here.
Totally. Yep.
All right. So basically, if I got this right, I'm going to pick up what you're putting down. Hopefully, maybe a little bit.
Let's see.
Okay. So Britain needed a real king during this time. And instead, they got a narcissistic egomaniac that was running the show.
Perfect.
Okay.
You're listening.
And a bunch of shit is going on all over the world.
Bunch of shit everywhere.
And he's not really showing any signs that he's in command or control.
You nailed it.
Okay. So, I love me some history, but come on already. What does this have to do with Bridgerton? When are we going to talk about Bridgerton? Is there anything else that I really got to know about the time period before we can launch into this?
You're getting ahead. So you got to deal with me before we get to Bridgerton. Okay. So we just figured out that basically the Regency era was an unsettling time. Britain was going through a shift of power from the old monarchy to the new parliament of elected officials. So it was really a tumultuous time period in general. So not only have all the wars and everything we just talked about, but the fact that the Prince Regent liked to party all the time, and you kind of get the idea why we're so obsessed with romanticizing the Regency era.
But how do you romanticize any of that? Like, what are we romanticizing?
Okay, so first off, we were romanticizing all things culture and art, right? We saw the emergence of insane authors, like we said in the teaser.
And by insane, you mean magnificent.
Magnificent. Jane Austen, whose works always provided a detailed social commentary on the era, which folks just ate up at the time.
I mean, it's kind of like us on social media right now.
It is exactly like social media right now, right? So her novels, Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, they reflected the manners and education, marriage, money issues, like all the things people cared about at the time. And then you had the fashion, particularly women's clothing, with its high waists and flowing lines. It represented a significant departure from the more rigid styles of the preceding Georgian period. So they were getting there.
They're getting all sorts of fancy.
They was. The chicks was getting hotter. Right. And even the architecture and the buildings had a makeover. So architect John Nash, who's John Nash? Okay, only like the most famous architect in England, but I won't bore you. So he designs Regent's Park and Regent Street, known for its shopping and cultural influence. And anyone who was anyone was out and about showing off their latest style in the new downtown, thanks to Johnny Nash.
I mean, conveniently named Regent's Park and Regent Street, huh?
Conveniently. Okay. So, all right. The Industrial Revolution was in full swing, and innovation in technology, manufacturing, and transportation were massively changing the way people worked and lived. And the folks were loving it. Cities were growing, and social classes were emerging and separating. It was awesome.
I mean, was it really awesome? But it's kind of like that Hamilton song, though, right?
Oh, like Look Around? Like, look around, the revolution's happening in New York. Exactly. That's what was going on in Britain. It's same, like, yes, that was just a little earlier in America, but you got it. Okay. And finally, there was a social life. The Regency years were known for their focus on high society, leisure, and entertainment. And the Prince Regent was leading the way and setting the tone for all the fashionable elite. There were balls, soirees, carriage rides, outdoor games, and all this added up to the complex social etiquette of the time. Theater was going nuts. Operas, plays, and concerts were popping up all over the place. You had Beethoven, you had Mozart, you got it all happening. Nightlife was the shit. So you sort of need to know all this so you can understand how strange it all really was. You got all these wars and stuff going on all around, but you also got all this new thought and new ideals all colliding at once, making this a time period like none other in history.
It just kind of feels like they're a little bit in denial, but it's all kind of super cool. And I love your perspicacity here.
Oh, good one.
I know. We got to get in quick or else we're not going to.
I think you did. I think that was right. I think you used it right.
Okay, good.
Good job.
Good. I think I'm getting why we were so obsessed with this time period
good.
And why so many authors and artists are still inspired by it today. And I guess that's exactly why Julia Quinn created Bridgerton, right? The book series.
I would say so.
All right. So can we talk about it now?
Yes, finally. You can talk about it now.
Okay, good.
Go for it.
Okay, so we already explained the gist of Bridgerton earlier. But personally, what I specifically love about the way it was written was like that it was written through the eyes of females wanting to marry for love instead of just status.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I know it was a whole romanticism, right?
Yes.
But the backdrop of the Regency era is what makes it so awesome because it sort of flies in the face of the expectation of the time and that it's exactly what romanticism is all about in a nutshell. So I guess well done, Julia. Sure. So give me a little bit about how Julia used this time period to make her books that much more appealing to audiences today.
Well, I thought you'd never ask. So first, you got the romantic and glamorous appeal. The Regency period is often romanticized for its elegance and refinement.
Like this podcast.
Oh, nice shout out. Totally. So this era, with its beautiful fashion, grand balls, and strict social codes, totally provides the perfect backdrop for romance novels and high-stakes romantic entanglements, which, who are we kidding, are the central plot to all Quinn novels. Yeah? Then you have the literary tradition that we already talked about in the teaser at the beginning. By setting her novels in this period, Quinn taps into sort of this well-established genre that readers find familiar and appealing thanks to authors like Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters. And this connection to classic literature, I'm certain that it enhances the interest in her stories. It has to. Then you have the social structure of the Regency period, with its classes, gender roles, and emphasis on marriage and inheritance. And so it provides a perfect backdrop for storytelling.
And I gotta say, I think Quinn nails it here. She creates a perfect character as a plot that explore all these things, and then the tug of war between all of it is quite amazing. I think she really had a good idea with this book series and seeing it through all the different siblings' eyes.
She did. I'm a dude, and I read them.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably read it for other reasons, but okay. What else besides those?
Yeah. Touche. Okay, so this one's a little more nuanced, but stay with me. The Regency period is short, well-documented, and historically rich, which I personally think makes it perfect for both authors and readers. You can have depth and authenticity without overwhelming readers with too much complexity. And because of that, Quinn gets to focus on character development and romantic plots, which always creates the best story.
I agree.
There's also a lot of visual and aesthetic appeal, which is more for the Netflix series adaptation instead of the books, but it totally works. So like the fashion, the architecture, like all the grounds, it all adds a layer of like charm and sophistication. And when you watch the shows, like the gowns, the mansions, the balls, the parties, it's an amazing backdrop for the audience.
The books really do the same thing here, but I think visually, yeah, the Netflix series brings it home.
Totally brings it home. It's awesome. Yeah. So, and then finally, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I think she picked the era because it has series potential and everybody wants to, like, you know, draw it out. Back then, everybody was tight, like super in each other's business. So it was easy for spinoffs. Like, she could do anything she wanted to, really. It would, like, write itself, basically.
I mean, Queen Charlotte.
Oh, right.
Amazing.
Yeah, right. The other Netflix series.
And now she's writing a book.
Yeah. So
to give the backstory.
So perfect. You just totally, like, proved my point. Anyway, so that's why I think Quinn used this time period specifically for her backdrop of all her novels.
So since she used this time period for the backdrop of her novels, how do you think the Netflix series is in similarity to actual history? Because you know I love my mockumentaries. And so I'm just wondering, like,
you and the damn mockumentaries.
I know, they're so good, though. But I watch as if it's a mockumentary. So is what I'm seeing actually historical?
Okay. In a lot of cases, yes. So you want me to run through some similarities, yes, and I'll do a few differences?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go. All right. So first we have the setting, right? So Bridgerton's set in a fictional version of Regency era London. Fine. I got it. It's not all real, but it's got the ballrooms, the elegant fashion. It's got the grand estates. And I think it captures the glamour and sophistication of high society, like, really, really good during this time. I totally give it an A for setting.
Okay. I agree with you here. And they use actual places.
Yeah. Yeah. They're using them. All right. Second, we have the social customs. Bridgerton does a good job depicting the strict social hierarchy with etiquette, expectations surrounding courtship and marriage, and just sort of family life in, like, upper class society in general, right? The debutante balls, arranged marriages, and even the scandals in the Netflix series were all part of the ongoings of the time.
It's insane. And I can't even believe that all of that was true.
All of those parts are, like, like, not the exact script writing, but all of the concepts, super true. I give it an A. All right. Third, you have the historical context. And this is the part where I love, but things go a little sideways, in my opinion.
Oh, why?
So Bridgerton takes some creative liberties here, right?
Well, like, I mean, of course. Right. I mean, it was, gotta make it interesting.
You have to, right. It was inspired by the Regency era's political and cultural landscape, but not all of it was accurate because it would be, like, kind of boring if it was. Like, it wasn't, like, super exciting all the time. So I think the writers did a good job building up some things to sort of make it more interesting. Overall, I'd give this, like, a B. They were pretty close.
Well, what's one example of something that's not historically accurate?
Well, the whole Queen Charlotte was in charge. I mean, it was really the Prince Regent, we know. So they gave Queen Charlotte way more of a voice in this one. So that would be, like, a pretty darn good example.
She's my favorite character, so I'm okay with this.
So that's why I think, that's why I gave it a B, because I loved it. Okay. Then we have the Diamond of the First Water. So in the Netflix series, it's the job of Queen Charlotte to name a debutante as the pick of the social season, the so-called Diamond of the First Water.
Oh, I love this one. But tell me that this term was true.
So I did a little Googling, and there's actually no historical evidence that this term was true.
Oh, bummer.
However, during this time, it was socially acceptable and pretty normal to, quote, mark certain women by the press of the day as beautiful or pretty, and their names would appear in the newspapers, and they would be written about and publicly celebrated, sort of becoming celebrities for the season.
I mean, this kind of feels a little weird.
Yeah, so fun fact, sometimes they were actually ranked with score sheets. So I'm going to say this one was pretty close. I'm going to give it an A minus.
Wait, isn't this what Mark Zuckerberg did before he created Facebook?
What?
It was called like Face Mash or something.
Oh my God, yes,
and
it was.
He just like compared women and guys would rate them.
Yes.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
So basically, we've gotten nowhere in 200 years because we're still rating women. Just saying.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, yes, you're right, and I apologize for all men.
Okay.
Okay. Fair. Can we move on? I'm uncomfortable.
Yep. Go ahead.
Okay, next we have etiquette and protocol. So Bridgerton does a good job with etiquette, showing how it was like super rigorously observed, especially with this social season that we just talked about. It was totally true during that time period to decide which daughters were out in society and to decide how many dances one person could have with somebody else. Also, the way Queen Charlotte managed her actual court was super accurate because protocol was everything. She loved her tradition, man.
But I feel like the Brits just love their tradition.
They totally do. They don't keep up with the times. But for as much as all this is pretty accurate, Bridgerton did take some liberties with the whole idea of, like I said, Queen Charlotte, like handling the matchmaking, starting scandals and all that stuff. So B plus.
Okay,
I give it B plus.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Queen Charlotte. I just have one question.
What?
Zebras?
Zebras?
Zebras.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that how they say it? They don't say zebra. They say zebra.
They do. They say zebras. So, yeah. I looked it up. So she really did have a bunch of zebras. And fun fact, the zebra was a super important symbol in the late Georgian court. Huh. So she got her first one in 1762 as a wedding present, like a wedding gift, and kept it in a paddock in Buckingham House, which George III had bought for her. And later became known as, of course, the famous Buckingham Palace. So the zebra was a perfect A+.
Oh, so accurate.
Totally accurate, yes.
Also, yeah. I think that zebra was pretty lonely. It was the only zebra.
Why
a zebra? Anyways,
I don't know
so
any
many questions.
Of that. Right.
Okay, sorry.
But it was super accurate.
I digress.
And then there was the outdoor game they always played called Pall Mall, which was really just croquet. You know, like the lawn game where you hit the ball around on the grass, like with the wooden mallet? Croquet. I don't know why they didn't call it croquet. They called it Pall Mall.
I mean, really fun to watch them in the show.
Yeah. It was featured a ton in the second season. Anyway, totally accurate. Big game. Super social. I give it an A.
All right. Okay. But seriously, how many more of these do you have? Because really all I want to know is, was Lady Whistledown real? Or at least the idea of publishing gossip in the local paper. Please tell me it was.
So, sorta.
Oh.
Yeah. So, no, this is all right. It is true that magazines back then ran series that exposed romances and, like, specifically adulteries and scandals. But the difference here is that in real life, their identities were more, like, disguised, right? Like, loosely disguised.
What? Loosely? How can you be loosely disguised? They obviously knew who you were talking about. Well, it was so small, right?
So conjecture. But yes, I think most likely that was the point because it was just a way to get around libel laws back then. So there would have been no point in them writing these things anyway about people if the general public didn't know who they were. So I'm pretty sure they knew who they were talking about. They just had to disguise it. And in the Netflix series, they don't disguise it. So that's the only difference. So I'm giving it a B+. Like, it legitimately happened, just a little different.
I mean, I'm going to go A- because you got to love Lady Whistledown.
I'll give it an A-. I could be swayed. All right. And then my last one, but like certainly not least, was fashion. Dude, like this is the reason you watch, right?
They nailed it. Okay.
They nailed it, right. Okay. So let me buzz through a few. So the Empire silhouette dresses that all the ladies wore with the high waist that flowed super loosely over the body, perfect, perfect hallmark of the time. The pastel colors, all the fabrics, spot on. The silk, the chiffon, and the lace, they were all used with their baby blues and pinks and lavenders. And then they had the gloves, the bonnets, the hair, all super popular during the time. The idea was these accessories complemented the overall elegance of attire and reflected what it meant to live in, quote, high society. And then for the guys, they wore the tailcoats, the waistcoats, the cravats, top hats, which pretty closely resembled the formal attire worn by all guys during that time. The idea was that the outfit made the man.
Maybe you should take a lesson from them, Pete.
Wow. Oh, okay. And finally, the hairstyles. The updos, the braids, the soft curls, they were perfect. Probably because those things are the easiest to copy since we knew exactly what they all looked like.
All right, so I'm hearing two things. One, if you're totally into fashion, you should watch it just for the fashion alone.
Yes.
And second, whoever does their wardrobe and makeup needs a huge raise.
I think they make $1 million already.
I don't think they do. But that'd be great if they did, but I don't think they do. But they look awesome, so there you go.
That's the reason to watch.
So that was a long list of similarities.
Sorry, you asked.
I did. So just to clarify, we do think the Netflix series did the Regency era justice.
Nailed it.
But I'm sure that there's got to be some differences.
Oh, there's differences.
Was the list short?
Chill out, dude. I have like three.
Okay, good.
I didn't realize you got...
Well, because if you tell me there's a lot of differences...
I thought you loved this. Okay, no, like whatever.
If there's a lot of differences...
There's
then
not a lot of differences.
It would change, right? My perception of the series.
Not a lot of
differences.
Because
then they missed the mark.
We're good.
Good.
Not a lot. Okay. So first we're going to start with D&I, diversity and inclusion. So there is no way back then that there would have been this many people of color running around in high society Britain. Sorry. Just wouldn't have happened. They were all white. And I think Bridgerton did a great job incorporating a massively diverse cast, including people of color, in prominent roles, which differs a lot from what was really going on back then. So good job, Shondaland, for intentionally reimagining history to reflect a more inclusive representation, A+.
I agree. Yeah. I will also say it's not just people of color that they're including in the representation.
Women everywhere.
Women, but also disabilities.
Yeah.
And the newest one, there is somebody in a wheelchair.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, and sign language.
Yes.
Yeah, so they're really expanding past just the people of color.
Okay. Well, then that's cool. The reason to watch. Let's go. All right, so second, we just have the general, I don't know, I'll call them modern sensibilities.
What is that?
Yeah. So the Netflix series really has no choice but to incorporate like modern attitudes and like modern language, which would appeal to our audiences today. Like they couldn't talk like back then. It wouldn't sound as good.
They kind of do. A little bit, right?
To some degree.
But is it more about like the music?
It's a lot of the music, but even the dialogue, like they're really gearing it towards people today.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know
if I caught on to the actual dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
But
there's a total modern twist to it all.
Yeah, they play today's songs, but classically.
And listen with a different ear and you'll see what I mean. It would be harder to follow if they were really using the appropriate
language. Like they're not using like
then.
No way.
So that's, again, you have to do it. If we want people to watch, they gotta adjust. And I think these
gotta
are two.
Gotta make it a fun mockumentary.
Even though they're differences, I think they're excellent, like super excellently done, if that's even like a thing.
Yep.
Okay, and finally you have the king and queen in Bridgerton versus the prince regent.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it a little bit earlier. Yeah. So the king and queen at the time were set as King George III and Queen Charlotte. However, if you were listening earlier, George III was not actually ruling. So anyway, his son, George IV was. But Bridgerton decided to use Queen Charlotte at the center of the drama, which I think was brilliant for trying to break boundaries and have more women playing prominent roles, but not historically accurate.
All right. So I get we have a few differences here, and I think they're all totally necessary and actually add to the reason why people are so attracted.
I completely agree.
To the Netflix series.
Yep. Look, at the end of the day, it helps people learn a little something about history, like we always say, while still being able to enjoy a fun story all the way around. Like, it brings history to life. This is what you and I love.
I do.
So
I love it.
I know there's
so
purists out there that like get pissed. But this is kind of the reason for our podcast, too. Like, we want to make things relevant for folks today.
We do.
Yeah.
And how else to make things relevant? Got some fun facts for me?
These
are just the quick things that I use when I'm talking to people in real life.
I have gotten a lot better at this now. So I'm loaded. I'm ready to go.
Let's go.
We're ready. Okay. Number one, during the Regency era, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Okay. For the record, didn't know he had a last name.
Yeah. Bonaparte.
Mm-hmm.
Bonaparte. Was exiled to the island of Elba in 1814 after his defeat in the Napoleonic Wars. But what many people don't know is that he famously escaped and briefly regained power for 100 days before being defeated again at the Battle of Waterloo by British and Prussian forces.
He just wouldn't stay
down. He wouldn't go away. And it was called the Period of 100 Days when he totally escaped, literally right past the guards. It was amazing. Okay. Number two, during the Regency era, they didn't have indoor plumbing, of course. So instead, they used chamber pots to go potty. Makes sense, yes. But I bet you didn't know that when the ladies were all dressed up in their garb, it was way too complicated. So they used a portable urinal called a bordeloo, which could be tucked under their skirts when they needed to go.
I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, so there's
like,
they're just walking around, and then like one of their like servants or something's like, hey, and they just put it down, and then just pee right in front of everyone. This is fantastic.
No.
And super convenient.
No.
I want
No.
I want a Bordaloo. Okay, number three.
You can Bordaloo anywhere.
Oh, yeah, but not like right here in front of you right now. It would be amazing if I could go right now.
Then you'd have to wear a big dress.
Oh, then maybe I will for our next episode.
Okay.
Okay. Number three. Some men wore corsets as Prince Regent made it fashionable to wear them. And many men, of course, would want to follow his lead so they could be all cool. It was thought that he wore them to show off his shoulders and legs. But his secret was soon revealed when the public found out it was really used to hide his fatness, people. And he tucked himself in with the corset. He was pulling Spanx, dude, 200 years ago. I mean, he was doing it.
It's brilliant, except now only women wear Spanx. But...
he was doing it. All right. Number four, the elaborate fashions of the Regency era occasionally led to some humorous mishaps. This one's sad but funny. Okay, women's high-waisted dresses with their like flowing skirts could be prone to accidentally catching fire from open flames in candlelit rooms. Yeah, you heard me. Leading to embarrassing moments for the wearer, I guess, like as her dress went up in flames.
Is this where the term fire came about?
Oh my,
like
oh
when,
my God.
Like
oh
when
my God.
People are like, she's so fire. She's so
That's it. She's so fire.
But she's like, that is fire because she's I can't.
Oh my God. That was hysterical.
New meaning.
Okay. Number five. Exotic pets were fashionable among the aristocracy during the Regency
what?
Era.
Besides like Pomeranians?
Way pom-poms? Besides Pomeranians. Some of the rich folks kept monkeys.
Or corgis, I guess I should say. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. The corgis. Yeah. She loved the corgis. No, these are monkeys. They kept monkeys, leading to some pretty funny incidents of mischievous monkeys causing havoc in the grand houses, in the gardens. Like flinging poo at each other, probably.
They just ran about.
Right.
Monkeys.
Yeah, I just want monkeys and I'm going to fling poo.
I mean,
I don't make this stuff up.
I guess
up,
a
dude.
Zebra is also an exotic pet. So
a zebra.
Fair. Zebra.
And finally, number six. The strict etiquette of the Regency era sometimes led to pretty uncomfortable situations. Don't get weirded out. For example, it was considered improper for gentlemen to sit with their crossed legs like this in the presence of a beautiful woman, leading to awkward attempts to hide their manhood, if you know what I mean.
I don't get it.
Their erections. So hot chick sitting across from them. But men couldn't cross their legs.
They could not cross their
legs. No, they could not.
Legs.
So when I cross my legs, I can hide something from you if I needed to right now. If I couldn't cross my legs, you would be looking at me very funny.
And so it's inappropriate to cross your legs. They just sat there.
They just sat there and it would just show. And yeah.
Well, why don't we wrap this up on that note?
Let's do it.
So the Regency years were like Britain's awkward but fabulously dressed teenage phase. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
And Prince Georgie Boy partied hard while his dad, George III, was benched because he was mad.
He was totally mad.
Think Jane Austen meets a Napoleonic reality TV show?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So complete
yes.
with dashing dukes, scandalous affairs, and the occasional epic battle.
You are a perfect understudy. Job well done.
I was listening this time because I was thoroughly interested. So it's a time when people got fancy with their fashion and even fancier with their drama. Here's the part of the episode, Pete, where you got to give me the elevator pitch in 2 minutes or less. What do I need to remember so I can share with others?
All right, here we go. If you don't remember anything, at least do this much. First, watch Bridgerton season 3 on Netflix, or better yet, read the novels. Second, at your next happy hour, be sure to ask someone what they're binging or reading. Third, listen and care about what they say for a minute and maybe ask a few legit questions. Fourth, wait for a pause in the convo. Timing is everything, people. And tell them you just finished watching Bridgerton Season 3, a series set during the Regency era in London, focused on the affluent Bridgerton family's 8 close-knit siblings and their widowed mother as they manage their way through various romantic entanglements and societal changes.
Not about the sex.
It's totally about the sex.
But you know, in a professional setting, you may not want to lead with that one.
That's true. And finally, share these interesting and relevant details to seem sort of sophisticated. First, the Regency years dated from 1811 to 1820, a short but very complex time in our history. Second, many famous authors wrote historic novels and poems during this time, most notably Jane Austen, Lord Byron, Walter Scott, Charles Dickens, and Charlotte Bronte. Third, Regency fashion was characterized by elegant high-waisted dresses for women and tailored dandyish attire for men.
And corsets.
Architecturally, it was marked by the development of the neoclassical style seen in iconic buildings and terraces in cities like London and Bath. Fourth, the era was also known for its refined manners, social etiquette, and the emergence of the new social institutions such as exclusive clubs and high society events.
Keeping the rich with the rich and the poor with the poor.
It was happening. It was happening all the way back then. And finally, King George was a nutbag, Queen Charlotte brought the Christmas tree to England, and the Prince Regent himself was notorious for eating and drinking like a pig and partying all the time, earning him the unflattering nickname Prinny, and making him a frequent subject of satire and ridicule.
I love how you always give me a fun fact at the end.
Right? I know. She brought the Christmas tree to England. She brought it from Germany to England. It didn't exist.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I know.
And there you have it, dear listeners. That wraps up our jaunt through the Regency years, a time when fashion was tight, morals were loose, and the Prince Regent's waistline was ever expanding. If you ever find yourself transported back in time, remember, always carry a fan for those swoon-worthy moments, practice your scandalized gasp for high society gossip, and maybe pack an extra pair of breeches, because you never know when they'll split from all those waltzes and pastries. We'd like to think we've shared just enough information to make you either a flaming nuisance or a bit more sophisticated to your fellow humans. Sort of. Until next time, keep your gossip flowing and your corsets tied. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly interesting, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.